Talk about investment projections for offshore wind in the U.S. and how investment projections relate to price, supply chain, and I'm going to tie that into the Gulf States opportunities for offshore wind, which I think is really enormous. I then want to spend a little time with you, especially the younger lawyers here, on the legal services that we believe that our industry is going to need from Gulf Coast attorneys. So we're going to give you a list of the different types of legal work that could be done. And then I'll spend a little more time on permitting, which is a specialized part of that legal services program. And related to that, and maybe surprising to you as attorneys, is a call for you to pay really close attention to stakeholder relations. Even as attorneys, it's really important that as you work with your clients, stakeholders are involved because they're going to be the ones that are supporting or opposing permits. I'll get to that. And then I want to talk about the role of the Gulf Coast industries, specific industries that can serve the U.S. offshore wind industry, particularly along the East Coast of the United States. And I'll close with a little a commercial for my company, and for which is Magellan Wind, and for floating offshore wind on the West Coast. So a couple of data points. I'm not going to touch all of these. The first offshore wind farm was built in Denmark in 1991. Then a larger one, large scale, was built in 2000. The first floating offshore wind turbine was deployed off the coast of Norway in 2009. And the first and still only U.S. offshore wind farm was built off of Block Island, Rhode Island, in 2016. Five turbines. Compare that to Europe and Asia's deployment of 4,500 offshore wind turbines. So in the United States, we've got five, one of the largest energy users in the world. We have five offshore turbines, 4,500 in Europe and Asia. So we have some catching up to do. But that delay has benefited the industry because there are so many learnings and cost reductions and scale improvements that it's going to let us hit the ground at a very fast pace. I'm going to prove that to you in a second. So just one projection to think about. By 2040, the International Energy Agency projects 300 gigawatts of offshore wind to be deployed. When I started in this business, we got excited talking about a 3.6 megawatt turbine. My projects are modeling 14 megawatt turbines for floating offshore wind right now. Hub heights are going to 140 meters. Blades are longer than a football field. Can't be transported on any road in the U.S. They're going to have to be made either quayside or brought in from ships from overseas, and they're weighing 50 to 70 tons a blade. So we're spinning 200 tons out there in the ocean. This just gives you an idea of the rapid growth, both the annual growth and the cumulative growth of what we've seen in offshore wind. Just staggering numbers around the world here. This slide on the right-hand side, I'd like to dedicate it to Abby Hopper, who you heard earlier from the Solar Energy Industries Association. This right side, which is too small to read, is a credit to Abby. Each of these little black bullets is an activity related to developing offshore wind in the United States, and all of them came out of Abby's shop. She ran the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management during the Obama years and really pushed this industry forward. I spoke with Abby after her presentation. Sadly, she's very happy with the Solar Energy Industries Association because we would like to have her back on our side of the aisle on this. She just did a phenomenal job. On the left side of this map, you'll see California and Hawaii. They're at a very slow pace of development, primarily because of Department of Defense issues. There are some real Department of Defense justified uses and what they call military equities out in the ocean where we'd like to develop. The admirals that are our consultants tell us that probably the most important space in the U.S. for the military are these sites, and definitely there's compatibility to take the 36,000 square miles. I think I'm getting into my offshore wind commercial here, the 36,000 square miles of space that the DOD wants to claim as off-limits to offshore wind. Surely we can find 750 square miles to build the first 3 to 5 gigawatts of offshore wind in the United States, and we'll get there. What I like about this slide is that it was published in August of 2019, and it's significantly out of date in January 2020. Three charts by three different well-respected analysts in offshore wind. Bloomberg New Energy Finance told us that by 2030 we'd see around 12 gigawatts of power, if you look on the right side of the legend there. 4C and the Special Initiative for Offshore Wind, a University of Delaware research group on offshore wind, told us we'd get to 16 gigawatts by 2030. But we're already at 25 gigawatts, so we've exceeded the projections of these analysts. By 2035, we'll see 25 gigawatts of offshore wind. These are committed goals by governors. In most of the East Coast states, there are carve-outs for mandatory purchase of offshore wind by the investor-owned utilities. I don't think we'll see that on the West Coast, but on the East Coast, there are mandatory carve-outs. One of the reasons is it's tougher to meet the carbon reduction goals and climate goals in the Northeast, where you have too many clouds, not enough space for solar, and not enough space for really major utility-scale offshore wind. So this is also out of date. This was published in March of 2019, but it's a really important study that was done that asked about what the investment would be in offshore wind. And